What's good, y'all? It's that time of the year, and we've got bills to pay. So if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some new merch. If about 10% of you listening right now donate $10 to support the show, we'd have enough to cover an entire year's worth of cost of production. Over the years, I've been very intentional about turning down ads for things that didn't align with our values, so you don't have to listen to us talk about gambling or boner pills or any of that other crap. But that's only possible through the support of you, our listeners. So we've created some new ways for you to support, and again, if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some of our new merch. And of course, don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Now let's get into today's show.
Welcome to the Exhaust Notes Podcast.
What's good, everyone? Welcome to the Exhaust Notes Formula One Podcast, your new favorite Formula One podcast, your favorite Formula One podcaster's favorite podcast. Rohit, Todd, and Nick's favorite Formula One podcast. If we're being honest, probably beyond Formula One podcast. We have a lot of fun with this, so hopefully you're going to enjoy this show as well. We're just going to get it right into some hot takes this episode. We're going to talk a little bit about the evolving rivalry between Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris, and maybe some future rivalries between Ollie Bearman and Kimi Antonelli. So what's good, fellas? How you guys doing?
Living the dream, as is always.
I'm ready to continue my rivalry with Helmut Marko's good eye.
Let's go.
People aren't going to get that. I try to change my name to something funny F1 related every time we record one of these, and today it's Helmut Marko's good eye.
So, listeners, I'm going to give you a peek behind the curtain. So, at work, people have been so enamored by our hot takes on this episode that we now have a weekly hot take session where every Thursday at 3, in lieu of a happy hour, we have a hot take hour where everybody can bring in what was initially just a Formula One only hot take proceeding, but now it's evolved into other things. So basically everything in your life. And I'm telling you all of this because there were some great hot takes that we were going to pepper in. But one of the best hot takes I'd heard in that, and it doesn't have anything to do with Formula One, is all black outfits are lazy. And then I was like, we got to, first of all, make sure we put the right emphasis on the right syllable in that particular sentence. But yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but neither here nor there. But that's essentially our podcast in a nutshell.
As someone who wears predominantly black clothes all the time, I take offense, but also I agree.
I mean, I wear a lot of black too, but is it lazy or is it just non-caring?
I think it's efficient, because if you can do that to yourself in terms of like, hey, I'm just going to commit to this one color and it doesn't always have to be black. Maybe somebody's all about that goldenrod life or that periwinkle. It's one less decision you have to wake up and make in the morning.
That's exactly it for me.
A genius move.
How many people do you know that were just like, you know what, I'm going to wear all blue today, except for those of gang persuasions? And nobody does that. Nobody just wears like all yellow all the time.
Todd, I will just like you to be observant of most tech companies in the greater Silicon Valley area, as well as the other companies that try to emulate them. Because I can say at my current employment of work, whenever somebody read that hot take out, there were at least four people, all of us in the room, thought, ooh, that's a personal shot. So then we had to make an amendment to Hot Take Hour, which is, please, no personal shots at people. That can be either implicit or explicit.
Oh, man. I mean, look, this is like, the simplification of it is really what gets me. Like, I know I'm wearing a Midnight Organic t-shirt today, but it's a black t-shirt. I wear predominantly black t-shirts all the time. Maybe all white t-shirts all the time. Like I try to keep like a majority of my choices to a minimum, especially in the mornings. It's kind of like, I don't know, maybe, you know, Henry Ford's famous, you can have any color you want as long as it's black, and, you know, Fast and Furious, you can have any beer you want as long as it's a Corona. Maybe these people are onto something. Personal shots aside,
it's definitely efficient. And like you with the empire of shoes, you can wear all black all the time and just change up the shoes every day and still a good fit, right?
I think so, most of the time. Yeah. But all right, let's talk about efficiency. Who's the most efficient team on the grid right now?
Let me ask your question with another question. Are we considering this in a, dare I say, weight class filtering, where it's like, do we want to look at the top four, then we want to look at the middle class? because I think that there are two different answers. Obviously, the cream always rises to the top. The most efficient team right now is the team that's ultimately going to be the source and the subject of this episode, and that's McLaren. Because right now, it just seems that if they're three podium positions, they're going to get two of them.
It does seem that way. So I would agree.
Good eye over there. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I got to agree. It's McLaren, but like, I don't feel like it's, you know, thinking back to the last two, three seasons when we had Red Bull out front by a mile, it doesn't feel the same. Like, everybody keeps saying, all the drivers are saying in these pre-race interviews, it's just like, oh, this is McLaren's race to lose. And I think that's true somewhat, but I don't think the gap is as wide as it ever was for Red Bull when they had the dominant car, or Mercedes prior to that, or even last year when McLaren had the dominant car after, what was it, Miami or something. That was like a pretty big gap. This season so far, at least, feels like it's McLaren out front, and then depending on the week, it's Mercedes or it's Ferrari or it's Red Bull kind of pretty close second in the pecking order. And that's why we've seen, I think, a little bit of a mix. We haven't seen just a 1-2 from McLaren every single race so far. We've had Max with that great drive in, what was it, Suzuka or Shanghai?
Suzuka. How can you forget Yuki's home race that they were going to shoehorn him into?
Right.
But like, I think it's definitely McLaren as the most, you know, at least aero efficient team. I can't say the same for strategy, but everybody else is pretty close. And we're, you know, still not that far away from this new technical directive eliminating the flexi wings. And I think all bets are off once that happens.
By the way, flexi wings, also the new nickname I've given my mustache.
I mean, so that actually like kind of sends me towards like one of the other questions I had for you guys. I tend to agree with Todd. Like, I don't think that McLaren is dominant enough to be like, you know, just like, I don't know, like, you know, the last 3 years we've just been like, yeah, well, Max is going to win three or four. By now in the season, three, four races in, we knew that Max was just lights out beyond everybody else. This year seems really weird because it's something we've talked about a lot in the, like, do you want the two best drivers on the grid conversation? Because potentially you have two of the best drivers, maybe not the best, but like, obviously, Max is up there, and on any given day, any of the teams that you mentioned, like, they have a driver that could be considered the best. But you have the best car if you're McLaren. Now, you have Lando a few points ahead of Oscar, 4 or 5 points ahead of Max in the driver standings. You know, like, everybody is close, but McLaren really needs to win consistently in order for this to be, like, a long-term success for them. And I don't know if it doesn't seem like that's going to always be on the table for them, because I don't know if it's choices, strategy choices, or if it's just, you know, like potentially the flexi wing going away type thing where like you're going to have a reset on the grid. But the biggest thing to me is like Lando, in my mind, has not lived up to his potential. And I know that's super early and I'm being over dramatic by saying that, but like he hasn't, I wanted him to come out and be absolutely dominant. But if Oscar is the one that's dominating on more occasions than Lando, and Lando's making little mistakes here and there and not pushing Max and Suzuka, you know, like all those things kind of add up to like, what's up with Lando? And I know it's super early and it's like not a question I should be asking, but as kind of like a diehard fan of Lando Norris, I'm wondering where he's at, you know?
No, you should be asking this, because ultimately we're in the content creation business and there's no such thing as, hey, it's too early to have the conversation. I will say this. There's a popular adage in relationships that your relationship doesn't start until you have that very first fight, because that's when you know what you've really got. We're about to see what McLaren really has, because I think, Nick, you mentioned that you had one opinion, and that was that, hey, Lando's a bit underachieving. Is he still not taking Oscar and this overall driver standing thing too seriously? And then to the gentleman to what would be my right in the blue, you said that Lando had a championship-esque race. So, Todd, can you dive a little bit deeper into that particular point?
Yeah, I feel like the overall theme so far this season has been that it's Lando underachieving. And while that is true on some facets, I think this last race in Bahrain actually proved that Lando is maturing and does have like the championship drive in him, because let's look at what happens. He qualified, what was it?
I think so.
Which was big time off the pace for where he should have been, right? Sixth is, I don't know, it was like 0.6 of a second or something that put him in sixth. But I think he owned that mistake. He said it was kind of all over the place, but he started the race, and granted, he was a hair over the line or whatever on his grid box, and thanks for the hall monitor. Max is turning into a bit of a hall monitor now.
Can't beat him, join him.
Yeah, Max called him out, whatever, he got the penalty, but he had an amazing start. That's the best start Lando's ever had. Yeah. Like, think about how many bad starts Lando's had. He went from 6th to 3rd in two corners, essentially. You know, I don't think the 6 inches, 12 inches that he was over the line helped him gain 3 places. That was just a good start by him. But then he also had a setback with the penalty. He had the time penalty, which set him back again. I think it was again back to 6th or 7th place after the pit stop. But then he proceeded to drive through the field on a track. Granted, there was a lot of passing on that track, but it wasn't like his car was miles faster than every other car. He had to really work for that. And he got himself back into a podium spot. And really, if he had probably one more lap, he could have gotten George on that last lap. I think George even said so. So I think McLaren, granted, like, Oscar was out front and just did his thing the whole time, but I think Lando proved a little bit of his worth in that last race, and I'm feeling a little bit more optimistic than I think we were a little pessimistic in the last few weeks based on his performances. But it's 2-1 right now in victories, right? So let's see where we are in 5 races time.
So is it safe to say that we don't have as high of expectations for Lando as we do for Max? Because that's what I'm hearing, right?
Yeah. Like,
Max, if Max did this last season, we'd be like, what the hell's wrong with Max? Because he's a world champion. So Lando doesn't have a championship yet. Presumably he gets one this year, maybe. But like, does our expectation for Lando then grow down the road? Or do we have the, oh, well, Oscar's there battling him? Because like,
I think there's
an interesting dynamic developing here, right? Around like Lando. Because I'm still a huge fan. I'm not knocking him in any way. Like, I will be a fan going forward still, but
I think it's two things, Nick. One, and it's the point you brought up, he doesn't have a championship. So until you win, you don't get that champion's benefit, is how I would phrase that. Secondly, the other reason why I think it's an interesting way of looking at Lando is Lando is the complete opposite of Max in terms of personality as well. Because he's so smiley and friendly, I think people mistake that sometimes as not caring. Or maybe like, oh, he'll figure this out. It's kind of the curse of Danny Rick, where it's like, if you're everyone's court jester, it's going to be hard to take you serious as a king.
Yeah, because there is a lack of ruthlessness, right? Like, the ruthlessness that we know that Max has, that we know that Lewis has, that we know that Seb had, that we know that Fernando Alonso had. Like,
more importantly, that we now think Oscar has.
That seems to be developing with Oscar.
Yes.
You know? Is like, and I think it's, and maybe this is just because Kendrick's still coming off of his, you know, world domination tour or whatever it's called, but like, it's almost like Oscar's the quiet kid in the back of the room, and like, we've all realized, hey, don't say anything wrong to him.
No, that's a brilliant analogy, because Drake and Lando have a lot of similarities. They're gonna win the quote-unquote popularity contest. Lando's everyone's second favorite driver, the way Drake might have been everyone's second favorite rapper before this Kendrick feud. They know how to play the media well. They're masters of the narrative. And to your point, Oscar is the boogeyman. Oscar's a silent killer. And it's one of those things to see that come to fruition in real time, because he is very quiet. He is very unassuming. We've made the joke that he's almost Kawhi-like in terms of sometimes he gets the joke and other times he doesn't. But what we're now starting to realize is, holy crap, the machine is evolving. It's gaining and growing sentience. And that can be a very scary thing, because we were ready at the start of this season, because you guys let me know if I'm speaking out of turn, we were ready to almost hand this constructor's title to McLaren. It was a question of, Ben, how many points is Lando going to overtake the field by? And now it almost seems like, hey, Lando might not be able to even overtake his own teammate. And the question and conversations are also shifting towards now is Oscar going to be the one that runs away with it? And that being said, I still think they, in this case, they being McLaren, tend to favor Lando more than they do Oscar. But it's going to be very interesting, because to your point, Nick, how are we going to look at this at every 5 races now? Because we've done 2-1 out of 4 races have been papaya-based wins, correct?
3 out of 4 so far have been papaya wins.
With Max getting the lone non-papaya win. Let's look at the next four races, right? And maybe that's the ideal time for the inevitable hot takes episode that we keep talking about. And maybe we'll do it. But that is going to be a good trimester to look at, because I'm assuming that there will be maybe one more non-McLaren win in the next four races. And if that is the premise that I'm giving you, how do you guys see that shaking out in terms of Oscar wins versus Lando?
First off, I have to go back and say you've slightly spoiled the image to me of Lando. I also am a big Lando fan. And now if your comparison to him to Drake, I kind of don't like Lando as much now. I'm just like, oh, Oscar, ride or die. Like, you can't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
It was Engvall. Engvall was the one that made the Kendrick thing.
Man.
No, all right. I'll admit
apologies
it.
To the fans out there.
By the way, if there's a Drake on the podcast, it's me. I've got the most punchable face.
It's not true at all. Ramrod. I think we're going to see, like, in four races time, it's going to be like, assuming, let's just say McLaren wins the next four, which I don't think will happen, but I think it'll be like, you know, like 3 to 4, like, there'll be one race different. I think even I know you guys didn't watch free practice yet for this weekend's race, but they're right there. It's Lando 1, shout out to Pierre Gasly, because he was fastest by a mile in free practice 1. But Lando and Oscar were right there at the top, the podium, both times so far. So we're going to see that, I think, for the majority of these races, and it's really McLaren's chance to lose these upcoming races, up until we see the technical directive with the flexi wing. But, like, honestly, I think we're looking at 50-50 chances for each of them. Oscar, as you said, is like silent killer. He's, even when he won, did you hear him in the car last week when he won the race? He's like, oh, right on. Thanks, guys. Good race, everybody. It's just like, that's your, what, third win in F1? You think you'd be a little bit more excited than that?
What would Hulkenberg do? I think Hulkenberg would sacrifice a child.
Actually, I think he would jump the car into something, yeah.
I think it's the form of victory, right? Oscar just came out and you know, never lost the front. Like, he was in front the entire time. So I think the level of excitement comes from the competitiveness of it. Like, if you're neck and neck and you're battling with somebody, or if there's the chance that you might get overtaken at the last, you know, turn or two or whatever, there's a little bit more adrenaline flowing. But when you're just like, yeah, I'm out for a Sunday drive, cruising around at 200 miles an hour, and I'm faster than everybody else, I feel like that's a part of why he was kind of so nonchalant about it. Not trying to say he is not absolutely nonchalant about everything, but like, that race was so dominant. It was basically Max and Suzuka, you know, like, where it's like, okay, well, nobody's going to beat him. There's not enough passing. There's not, you know, once he's in the clean air, like you said in the last episode, Oscar was in the clean air from the very beginning. So he was literally seconds ahead of everybody within a couple of laps and just never looked back.
But maybe that's also the gift and the curse of building such a exquisite race car the way McLaren has, because are we going to see any scenarios this year that would involve a head-to-head with either McLaren 1 against McLaren 2 or McLaren 1A against 1B or McLaren against the field? Because at this point, it seems that when that car is in that clean air that you've mentioned, Nick, it's head and shoulders above everyone else. And I don't know if we're going to get those nose-to-nose races.
I think we will. I think this race was unique in this sense that, to Todd's point, Lando qualified terribly. Then he ends up getting a penalty, pushes him back again. So, like, he's you know, fighting his way upstream the entire race. At some point, we're going to have, like, a 1-2, you know, like, McLaren out in front by, you know, a long shot. And we'll get to see these guys actually kind of battle each other. I do think, you know, to Todd's point, if that rule change comes, I still think McLaren has the best car on the grid. Like, I feel like consistently that car is levels up above everybody else. But I actually think we're going to see a lot more from Mercedes. Like, Mercedes has really made just weird
progress.
Progress or choice to strategy choices in this season altogether, I think. Not that we expected them to come out and be dominant, but because they're right there so close. I mean, and I think we would all agree they're, you know, if not second, they're easily the third team. You know, like, you might debate that Max is, you know, better off in Red Bull, but like, we know that the Red Bull car is problematic for everybody.
I was going to say
Max is just muscling through it.
Max might be the better driver, but Mercedes has the better car. There's no question on that.
Yeah, yep.
I would push back, though, because if we think about, like, the... You kind of said, like, Oscar was out front and just kind of ran the table from there. That race proved to me that McLaren, I agree with both of you, that McLaren has the best car, and it is out front, but it's not by a mile. If we look back to, I think, the same race last year when Red Bull had the best car at the beginning of the season, I think after, like, 10 laps, Max was up, like, 10 seconds. And for the majority of this race, like, 1, 2, 3 were all split by, what, like, 6 seconds total? There was, like, about 2 second gap for...
No. I mean, Oscar was 15 seconds ahead of George.
At the end, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, that's after all the safety car craziness and everything else. Like, I think he finally checked out at the end, but the first half of the race, first stint, I would say, they were all within a couple of seconds of each other for a pretty long while. I just, that's, again, pushing back to my point on McLaren definitely is out front, but it's not by the same margin that we've seen in past dominant cars. So I think it's going to be a lot closer, and that kind of feeds into your point with Mercedes being right there of over the next 4 races, we could see a couple of 1-2s from Mercedes if Kimi gets it together, you know?
And this is where I'm circling back to the start of this conversation about McLaren. Lando beat Max by under a second. Oscar beat Lando by 9 and 15 and George by 15. Is that right?
Something like that.
So, like, he's clearly further out in front when he is out in front, in my opinion. I don't know. Like, I just think it's really interesting and something that, like, is going to be fun to watch this season.
But do you also think that's part of the fact that maybe Oscar feels that because McLaren is seemingly prioritizing Lando over him whenever it's one of those gut shot decisions, he has to kind of go out and above and beyond what is considered a competitive advantage over his teammate? Because if it is going to be any sort of heads or tails decision, more than likely, we're assuming that McLaren is going to side with Lando. So when he does have to beat Lando, he has to beat him convincingly.
I just don't think they're going to side with Lando. I think Oscar's already proven that, like, he is, you can't say that he is a lesser driver in any means. Like, he's come out, he's won 2 races already, and both of them were the most dominant wins of the season across the board. But, like, to me, yes, maybe he had a little bit more drive and he has a little bit more push because of the perception of Lando being the golden child for McLaren. But they're not, you know, like, it's early, but they're not going to stop him. They're not going to slow him down in order for Lando to win. If Oscar continues to be driving the way that he has been, then I think Lando needs to, like, really step up in order for this to be competitive for the rest of the year, especially knowing that changes are coming and that the rest of the teams are going to, like, to Todd's point, they're not far enough behind, especially Lando. Like, if he's going to be in the mix with 2 through 5 like everybody else, you know, that's not going to win a championship.
He's got to be out front there. You're right. Do we see them come together in, think, 2016, Lewis and Nico? Do we see some on-track flashes later this season if we are looking at a tight driver's championship? Do you think we have some collisions? We have some shenanigans?
I think there will be shenanigans, but this is where I think Oscar, given his, let's call it, aloof personality, he may not necessarily win the court of public opinion, because to the point we made earlier, Lando is Drake, and with being Drake brings a certain level of popularity, and sometimes if there's nothing else, popularity will trump anything, especially in the face of logic. So even if, let's say, in that hypothetical situation, Lando is the one or the catalyst for that hypothetical crash, I could see people siding with Lando because he's a more known, personable quantity.
Can we give him another hip-hop
we gotta stop this
analogy?
Yeah. I like it. I'm doubling down on it now.
I don't know. I don't think these guys are cutthroat the way everyone else is. And I know that's weird to say because it's Formula One, and, like, in order to have gotten where you're at, you have to be focused on yourself. But I really think that there is some element of team success that is fulfilling to these guys much more than anybody else on the grid, I would say, even. Like, I think the younger guys are maybe a little less competitive with their elder statesmen, let's say. You know, like, Kimi Antonelli is not going to be out there, like, driving George off the track. But I don't think that they care about the team win. It's really them drive, you know, like, I get that there is some element of that, but it's like a 10 or 20% for everybody, where I think the McLaren team wants to continue winning and being dominant. So I think that, you know, they're going to compete, but I think they're going to be respectful about it. And I think that that's the difference between that team compared to, you know, like if, you know, if you look at Max or even Lewis back in the day, Lewis is a little more, you know, respectful on the track than he was when he was younger. But like Max is still going to drive you off the road no matter who you are. Like we saw that with, you know, Max and Lando last year whenever they had the tire punctures and stuff. Like Max is not going to give an inch no matter what. He's not going to give any room for anything no matter what. Where like I think that, you know, Lando and Oscar are, especially because they both know that they're like in like the best spot to be in the title run, both on a drivers and a constructors. I think that, yeah, we'll see a little bit of back and forth from them, but I think that we won't see the same levels of chaos that we've seen in previous like competitive teams.
Todd, if you can remind me, how long were Lewis and Nico teammates before coming together?
Let's see. 3 years? Four years.
It was three, I think.
I think Lewis joined 2013. So did Nico was there replacing Schumacher. I want to say it was 3 or 4 years. About that.
Okay. And we're roughly 3 to 4 years into the McLaren partnership as we know it today, because wasn't Oscar's first year as a rookie also on McLaren?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. So this is the third year.
Yeah.
I think if they win one more constructors title, it's going to be fine. But if there is that flashpoint, then I think we're going to start seeing the origins of a supervillain story. Now, the question is, who's going to be the supervillain? And we know it's not going to be Zach Brown, because he right now is probably as happy as a pig in shit.
Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we all think that it's going to be a cool, calm, and collected Oscar, right? He has more like villain tendencies to just not get too excited or emotional about things. And Lando's, like you kind of mentioned earlier, is like the court jester. He's happy, he's amicable, he's friendly, a little petulant. We've seen it at times. So I don't know. Maybe it could be Lando. That's up in the air.
So,
but
go ahead.
Go ahead, Nick. No, you go.
No, I was going to shift topics. So.
So was I. I was going to say another teammate battle we wanted to talk about, or not teammate, but on track battle we wanted to talk about was Ollie Bearman and young Kimi, and who we think is having the better season, has the better trajectory. So let's get into that. We've seen Ollie have some pretty amazing drives in Haas this season. And granted, young Kimi being in the better team or better car, he's a little bit more up and down, but really showing his pace and his potential too. So who do you guys got? Who's your favorite early in the season?
So I like both of these guys a lot. And I think that Ollie Bearman is more calculated. Kimi seems like Lewis in his first year, like Max in his first year. Like he's making a lot of mistakes because he's pushing really hard. And that's worked out well for him so far. But at some point, you know, like he'll have some you know, mistakes that he can't. Yeah, shenanigans. I mean, look, he's going to be in the mix for the rest of the season, right? Like, so that to me is just a sign that, you know, he's going to make mistakes. Ollie has a little bit of a safety net being with Haas and being back, you know, further in the middle of the pack. I don't think that takes away from his skills, but I think he's driving that car better than anybody has driven a Haas car since their first couple of seasons, right? So to me, like, he's going to be the one to watch. We already expect it from Kimi. Bearman has been like, I don't want to say surprised. He's obviously really good, but like he's been way better than I think anybody expected.
I'll say it's a surprise just given what we've seen from him in terms of a whisper campaign, right? Because to your point, Nick, Kimi right now also ironically reminds me of your guy Yuki, where he's just going with it from the seat of his pants. He's trying to figure things out on the fly because he's got that boyish anxiety, if you will. Like, things will sometimes be misconstrued as growing pains or whatever the case may be. But with regards to Ollie, he didn't have the hype, so to speak, that Kimi did. And we just knew him that, okay, he was a part of the Ferrari program. He drove once during appendicitis issues for Carlos Sainz last year. And we were all pleasantly surprised by how well he did. But I think at the time, we were more attributing that to the car that he was driving, which was the Ferrari. And if somebody will correct me, I think he got seventh in that race. Did he not? When he was subbing in for Carlos?
He had two, didn't he have two subs?
Okay, two subs.
Was it one or two? I'm asking. I can't remember. I thought he might have had two, but he drove into the points is the point, right?
Yeah. And the other thing is, it is also much easier to have the gift of lowered expectations. Because coming into this, right, I would say I was probably the most bullish on Haas. But even then, I was trying to talk myself into, could they be the best of the rest or the Formula 1.5 champions? And right now, they are fifth place. And it's very interesting to me that they're able to do that, given the fact that for the last couple of years, what we've characterized as for the Haas post-Gunter Steiner era is one of a team that seems to be just going through the motions, is apathetic. There's nothing really memorable about them. Even their drivers were a bit of a retread, but they did well last year. But I still didn't think they would be at the heights of which they are. And I would attribute it to both drivers, but to this, for the point of this particular question, it's the fact that Bearman is doing this with little to no experience. He seems to be able to navigate not only the technical aspects of being a Formula One driver, but also the street smarts, right? Like, he'll throw a chow in your face. He'll throw some defensive blocks in there. And I think that's what's inspiring to me, because the whole premise of this question was, I told my two co-hosts that I think Kimi will have the better season, but Ollie will have the better career.
I think that's where I'm leaning also. We kind of joked about with Kimi coming into Formula One, and we call him Tweak for a reason. And I also like have said, like, I think he's either going to like finish first or backwards on fire. Like
Ricky Bobby.
First or last energy for sure.
Yeah.
Sorry. I got distracted because I'm actually watching F1 Academy qualifying as we are recording this. If you guys haven't watched F1 Academy, definitely do it. It's awesome. They're like run F4 cars and they're all branded versions of the F1 proper teams. So it's super cool to watch them on track. Leah Block, son of Ken Block, rest in peace, just crashed in qualifying. So
hopefully they're able to walk away from it. And it was just one of those crashes that looked worse than what it was.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, she's fine. She just touched the inside wall on the apex and it just shot her out into the exit wall, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I would say, going back to wrap on the Bearman and Antonelli conversation, I would just say that if you're new to the sport of Formula One, you're about to see like the best part of Formula One over the next 5 years. And you know, like, not trying to sell somebody on the sport necessarily, but like this is going to be, you know, like, as we move for this to this next generation, like, these guys are young. Like, Kimi's 18. Bearman's 19, or yeah, like 18 or 19. They are competitive, I would even say, beyond what Max and Lando were in their first couple of seasons already, which means they're going to get that experience. It's compounded, right? These guys are going to be a part of the front running teams probably for, you know, years to come. I don't think that will be Haas, but, you know, there's going to be a lot of things happening in the next few years. And, like, it's just going to be, like, I just feel like we're already seeing, this season is already off to an amazing start, to see Ferrari, Mercedes, Max, and both the McLaren cars competitive. And then to think that, like, Williams has been, like, creeping up into the points, to see, you know, Bearman into the points with Haas, like, this is, like, shaping up to be like a really amazing season. And I think it's going to be like an amazing few years to watch these guys go into their, you know, early 20s with so much experience with great cars and see where they go. Cause you know, that whether that's Red Bull or Mercedes, or, you know, I don't see Ferrari or McLaren making any changes right now, but like, Bearman's going to end up in another car that's more capable than a Haas car.
You know? Sky's the limit.
Yeah. Sky's the limit. Yeah, really, truly.
And just to kind of wrap a bow on the Bearman conversation, I forgot this. Ollie Bearman is the first Formula One driver that picked up points in his first two races. But here's the kicker. They were both for separate teams, because he did have two races last year. But the second race was because old Kevin Magnussen, I believe, got suspended. So he actually became the Haas driver.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. As well. So the pedigree is there. And I guess the other conceit I gave my two panelists was, are we thinking this is more Carmelo LeBron, where eventually one is going to separate himself so far from the other that it's not going to look like a rivalry, but we're in that infancy? Or is this going to be a true Magic versus Bird thing where we're going to see these guys push each other towards getting championships and turning into that personal rivalry? Because it seems that for this particular new generation of viewer, we've seen one aspect of Formula One, which is the dominant driver. But I guess some of the other more important historical contexts from a Formula One historical perspective is the fact that you also need a good rivalry. So the pro Senna of it all. And I think obviously it's a tall ask for each of them to be Prost or Senna, but maybe we can get there.
I mean, Prost and Senna is
hallowed ground.
But like, again, like this is a conversation we're going to have for the next few years because these guys are being pushed into this. I think, you know, whenever it was, we had that conversation about Max and Lando's experience, right? Like, Max starting a year ahead of Lando gives him such an advantage, but these guys starting and being in competitive cars is another layer of that that is going to just catapult them further out. Like, the sport to me is just going to become better and better because the drivers are getting younger and younger. There's mistakes that come with that youth, but yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be awesome.
And there it is, listener, our annual tradition of Todd going on mute and waxing poetic. I think this is the first time this year.
Well, as I'm sure you've heard, the gardeners are here cleaning up the backyard. So apologies for the leaf blower sounds. And that's why I was on mute. And I'm glad to also present the gift of me talking on mute to one Rohit Malhotra. And now I totally lost my train of thought, but I did have a good point that I will.
Was it something to do with a rivalry? Because watching your body language, when Nick and I were talking about the potential Prost and Senna of it all, I could see you kind of have this light-up moment. So hopefully as I'm filibustering and glamping, it comes back to you. And listener, he's shaking his head no at me. So I'm going to continue talking for five more seconds, trying to give him that extra.
It was the age thing.
Yeah,
it was the age conversation and the Max and Lando starting early, but these guys starting earlier and how.
What was the war like, Grandpa? It's.
We were talking about the fact last week about the how awesome it would be to have an all-rookie race once a season.
Yeah.
Every car on the grid is a rookie race. And I think we're edging closer, as you guys both alluded to, like the average age in Formula One is going downward. In the next few years, we'll see Fernando off the grid, probably. We'll see Lewis off the grid, probably. Well, Fernando might drive until he's dead. Who knows? But he may not have a choice. I don't know. Lawrence Stroll's going to get bored of being the team owner at some point and just sell it all. I think the younger the drivers, it creates chaos in a good way. I don't think necessarily a bad way at all. And I'm just really looking forward to this battle specifically, potentially down the road in better cars or both of them being in better cars. As far as like Magic versus Bird or LeBron versus Melo, that's too early to tell. I mean, it's like early LeBron and early Melo. They were both like right there. You could kind of see maybe potentially that LeBron was a little bit shaping up to be more dominant or whatever. But right now, that's how I feel about Ollie Bearman. But it could be a MJ and Bird.
Yeah, I don't know. I think LeBron carrying the Cavs for those first handful of years is kind of a lot like Bearman and Haas, right? Like, you can't say that with Kimi Antonelli. Kimi Antonelli's on a team that knows how to win. You know, like, granted, things are a little bit different than they were 3 or 4 years ago, but like, George has plenty of experience under his belt. The Mercedes team, I would say, has been almost one of the better teams as far as strategy goes over the last 5 years, you know, consistently. But yeah, it's going to be, I mean, I think it's just going to be fascinating to watch both these guys. And it's crazy, too, because we haven't gotten into the rest of the grid, you know, like the rest of the grid has so much potential as well that it's just going to be, I don't know, I feel like I'm just repeating myself. It's just an exciting time to be a fan of Formula One, in my opinion.
No, it is. I mean, we probably one of our biggest calling outs, talking points for us as a show is the fact that we find the mid-table battle to be probably the most interesting and exciting thing about Formula One, because inevitably it always seems that one team is head and shoulders above everyone else. I truly still can't make sense of what is going to happen in the midfield, because right now it is Haas, but I don't see them holding on to that for that long, because I still probably am holding out hope that Carlos Sainz figures it out, because to me it is almost baffling that he has yet to score a point in that car.
I know you guys didn't watch practice, but all reports are positive. coming from signs in the William and that side of the Williams garage. He says he loves how the car's set up, loves how it's feeling. I don't remember off the top of my head how he timing wise worked out in the practices so far, but it sounds like a much more positive experience this weekend so far.
It's crazy too, to just like, just glancing at, you know, P2 results, the top 11, 12 drivers are all within 1 second. You know, like, we typically don't see that tight of a...
Is this the American influence? Because if there's one thing I would always use to characterize American sports, it's the parity. Whether we want it or not, it always seems to be a hallmark of American sports. And by Formula One catering towards the American audience, is this something that they're secretly very happy about? Because now they have the best component of American sports?
Maybe. I don't know. Is there any thoughts, Todd?
No, I think... I don't know if it's the Americanism of F1, because they want our money, they just don't want our involvement.
They don't want
our jobs. It's a super tight field.
It is a super
tight. All right, we got any predictions this weekend for Saudi Arabia?
Before we get to that, can I just do my Grind My Gears segment?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yes, I joked about this in, I don't know if it was in the Discord or group chat or whatever, but the timing tower has been atrocious this year. Like, I know I always rail on FIA and F1 and FOM, whatever, about their TV direction and something, God knows what else. But Jesus, like, they tried to revamp the timing tower. And by timing tower, I mean, like, the timings on the left side of the screen during the race. And it is so broken and so wrong almost all the time now. Like, there'll be passes on track and it won't update for 2-3 laps. Or the timing itself just breaks, so all you see is the driver's names in an order that may or may not be accurate.
Was it, I swear at one point last race, there was about what felt like 5 laps, or there was no timing tower, and I was like, did somebody, like, was somebody getting fired? Like, what happened?
Yes. No, right. You are absolutely correct.
And wasn't there, like, I don't know if this is related, but there was all sorts of DRS issues, right? Like, people's DRS not like the, because all that timing allows drivers to say, cool, automatically kick on the DRS, right? Like, some tracks you have to hit the button, sometimes you don't. But like, there was a statement from McLaren when Lando was making his little run at the end where he's like, be super careful about when you hit DRS, be 100% sure that you are past the marker, because George's DRS wasn't working. Somebody's came on early. Somebody stayed on. Like, it just, I don't know if those are all the same issues, but it sure felt like it. Cause like, to your point, like, you would see on the tower, like on the left of the screen watching, you would see that, oh, Lando's within a second of George. And then all of a sudden it would be like 4 seconds difference. And it's like, wait, what? Like, that can't possibly be, because neither one of them made mistakes on the last lap.
Can I ask the one dumb question that I'm prone to ask during our episodes? Is the timing tower somehow connected to the DRS capability? Like, is there any sort of integration between the two? Because I always thought the timing tower was cosmetic for yahoos like me.
So yes and no. It is and it isn't. Every car has a transponder built into the nose of the car, right, that keeps track of its position on track and, like, its times. So, because they record lap times for every car for every lap, even within the mini sectors, and that's how all the data nerds for F1 teams find out where they're losing and where they're gaining on other teams. But the transponders in the nose report back to whatever software they use to keep track of all the timing. And from that, they
enable DRS.
No, they don't enable DRS. That is also based on the transponders saying, like, oh, you're within a second to the car ahead of you. It does not have anything to do with what's going on the TV, but it absolutely does have to do with the issues that they were having last weekend. I think the transponders on the track failed in some areas, and also on the cars. If you listen to, like, George's onboard, it was also a Mercedes issue where they warned him, like, he was about to lose his dashboard completely, as in, like, the lights on the steering wheel and all the information they get as a driver was about to go away. So Mercedes was having issues, the track transponders were having issues, and some of the other cars were also having transponder issues.
You know, I forget his name, Robert something, the director that just left the FIA, he had a great weekend because he's just like, yeah, I'm happy to see all this screwing up for the FIA.
Yeah, he said something a little more damning in his post-employment chat with somebody.
Yeah,
Just to drive the nail home one more time, like, stop screwing with stuff that isn't broken, FOM. The timing tower and the graphics and everything were fine the way they were. Stop messing with them. Because, yes, Ro, you are not mistaken. There has been multiple races this season so far where the timing tower just disappears. And it's for multiple laps. So you have no idea what's going on.
Maybe it's taking a pit stop, Tom. Maybe it's taking a pit stop.
It doesn't.
It needs to rest, too.
No.
You know what? I need to rest. I'm going to drop after this. This is absurd, listener.
All right.
Find me on OnlyFans at Flexi Sexy Wing.
Quick predictions, Ro. Go.
I'm going to go... You know what? I'll go George, Oscar, Max.
I'm going Lando, Oscar, George.
I want to go Lando, Max, Oscar. Max, I think, is back in the podium this week.
All right.
All right. Let us know what you think. If you haven't joined the Discord already, we'll put the link in the description to find us over there, and hopefully enjoy this weekend's race. And leave us a review if you haven't. We could use a few reviews on the old Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen to us on. Thanks for checking us out and listening. Catch you in the next one. Peace.